See, the second bell has rung. Time to get started here this morning. Welcome to our class. A big crowd this morning. Good to see everybody out on a slightly chilly morning this morning. They're passing out the handouts. There's a two-page handout again today. Well, lesson 8, Genesis chapter 12. Go back and do a quick review of where we are just to get us up with our study for the quarter. First section we looked at was before the flood. Five chapters involved in that, Genesis 1 through 5, the creation, Adam and Eve in the garden, the first sin, and then Cain and Abel, and then the generations chapter 5, getting us up to the time of Noah. And then the next section was the flood. Chapter 6 through 10, basically 6, the wickedness of the world, the preparation of the ark, 7, the flood begins, 8, the waters recede, Noah sends out the doves to look for the dry land. Chapter 9 is that chapter has some laws in it about no eating blood, capital punishment, the rainbow promise, those in chapter 9. Chapter 10 again is kind of a fast forward type chapter, we call it, the generations getting us up to the time headed toward Abraham. And then last time we looked at chapter 11, a little one chapter piece on the scattering of the people. Run through the review on that right quick for a little bit, and then we'll get into chapter 12 and start the study for this morning. Chapter 11, the people decided to build a tower to reach to heaven. The reason for that was they wanted to make a name for themselves. We talked about the pride involved in that, and making a name for themselves as opposed to worshiping God. They had brick. They had stones for brick. They had tar for mortars. They had the ability to build a tower from that standpoint. They thought that would be in the plain of Shinar down in the Mesopotamia Valley, which was a big part of the Bible story during this time. But the Lord came down to visit them to see what was going on. He knew what was going on, but he said he came down to see there. And people are all speaking one language at this time. And so God said, let us, we use that expression again we saw back in chapter 1, let us make man in our image. He said, let us go down and confuse their language. So they would not understand each other. They'd be confusing. They could speak to each other. That doesn't mean every individual had a different language, but they'd be groups. And so they would scatter out over the earth. If you go back to Genesis chapter 9, verse 1, they first came out of the ark. They were told then to multiply, replenish the earth. And so this is God getting that done by scattering their, confusing their language, making them scatter out. So they stopped building the city then. The place is called Babel. A couple of different definitions of the word there. When we usually think about it, it comes from the Hebrew word, means to jumble or confuse or confuse the language there, the city of Babel. Some might say babbler today. Then we got into talking about, introduced Abraham, the last part of chapter 11 there, getting down to the family tree there of Abraham. We talked about Terah, his father, and then we introduced three of the sons, Abram at this point it is known as, and Nahor and Haran being the three brothers here. Abraham, of course, he went through the thing here. Abraham married Sarai, his half-sister. We'll get to that today. We'll talk about that. And then Lot comes into the picture, which is Haran's son, Abraham's nephew, and we'll see him with him during our whole class session today as we get into that. So get this family tree in your mind. We're going to be taking off on it several different angles and during the next several weeks as we go through this. So Lot was the son of Haran. Terah, Abraham's father, took Abram and Sarai and Lot and moved up from Ur into Haran, or Haran, as pronounced sometimes. We're going to call it Haran. They stopped and lived there. And the Haran's a city. It's also the name of Abraham's brother, Abram's brother, so don't get too confused there. And Terah, Abraham's father, died in the city of Haran. So he leaves him there with that. And that's the path generally there, going from Ur down in the lower Mesopotamia Valley, up through the Euphrates River Valley, up to the city of Haran, going around the desert, what we call the Fertile Crescent up through there. They move through that. So that's where we kind of left them off last time, was in Haran, to go through that. So we talked about this verse here, the obedience of Abraham by faith. God makes promises. We're singing about the other Wednesday night, if you were here for our singing. God's promises. God makes promises. People of old acted on these faith. It wasn't just I have faith and I believe, that's it. There was action involved there. And the question we ask then is God made me a promise. Am I going to act on my faith to see that promise fulfilled by my obedient actions? Not producing works, but works that are obedient based on the faith we have in God. So that's where we left off last time. So we've covered 3 of the 17 periods of our Bible history we talk about. The Bible narrative, before the flood, the scattering of the people, in the first 11 chapters. Now then, we get into a long section here. And we start the section of the patriarchs, which is going to cover Genesis 12 through 50, the rest of the book and the rest of this quarter. Now the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We'll get into Joseph down at the end of it, which is the link that gets us into Egypt to get us ready for the next period as they come out of Egypt and then go down to Mount Sinai. But this time we'll spend Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and the 3 patriarchs there. So, getting involved, start in chapter 12 now. Chapter 12, verse 1. The Lord told Abraham, get out of your country, away from your family, and from your father's house, and go to the land that I will show you. So let's just look at that verse just a minute. Think about us here a minute. I think Abraham and related to us a little bit. Tell Abraham, get out of your country. Now, no jet airplanes, no fast cars. Abraham had probably never been to Canaan, or if you know, it's a reasonable assumption at least. Don't know that, but a reasonable assumption, because travel wasn't like it is now. But he told Abraham just to get up and move out of your country. Now, would you do that? Would I do that? Tell him to go from your father's house and to leave your father, leave your family. So think about what Abraham's been told to do here now. I'm talking about acting on faith, based in God. Leave your country. Leave your father's house. Leave your family and you don't know where you're going. You're going, I'm going to show you where to go. You don't know where that is yet. That's quite a challenge. And that one little verse. Leave your country, leave your family, and I'll let you know when you get there where you're going. That's a lot of faith to get up and move and go. So as we move into chapter 12, we're going to see 3 promises made to Abraham as he arrived, after he arrived in the land of Canaan. Now, the nation's promise, the seed promise, and the land promise. And we'll go through those in the next few verses here and talk about it. We get those 3 promises well established in your mind. Nation, seed, and land. And we'll see those and talk about the fulfillment comes out there. They're way down the road here, way off, before you see the fulfillment of all these. But those are the 3 promises. So, get into verse 2. Verse 2, God tells Abraham, I will make you a great nation. I'm going to make of you a great nation. And when at the end of Genesis, they go down into the land of Egypt, the statement is made, he tells Jacob to go there, I'll make you a great nation there. So he actually became a nation in the land of Egypt during that bondage time there, if you think about it. I like to use this verse here. This is at the arrival at Mount Sinai. So they've now left Egypt, thinking about ahead a little bit here. They left Egypt and they've gone out of Mount Sinai where they're assembled there and they're going to get the instructions of the tabernacle. They get the law given to them. The covenant given to them, the priesthood set up. So, and he says it there, if you look at one phrase down there, yes, I'm here. You shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. When they get out of Mount Sinai, now they have become this nation. that God's promised Abraham here. So God tells Abraham, I'll make you a great nation. Abraham didn't see that. But through his seed, a number of years later, probably looking at 400, 500 years down the road here, well, this time happens here in Exodus chapter 19. Which is, you'll be to be a holy nation, a special people. Also in chapter 17, he says, I'll make you a father of many nations. Verse 2 here says, Genesis 12, I'll make you a great nation. Later on he says, I'll make you a father of many nations, plural. Look at the difference. Think about that. And we'll talk about that in a minute a bit more. Make you a great nation, father of many nations. Verse 3 says, we're getting into the seed promise now. That's the nation promise. Seed promise is in verse 3, where he says, I'll bless those who bless you, and curse him who curses you. Forget the blessing for a minute. Let's talk about that little thing there a minute. How would you like it to God to tell you, I'll bless those who bless you, I'll curse those who curse you. I'm going to take care of you. You do what I want you to do. You obey me. You have that faith that you've demonstrated here. And I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. That's pretty good protection. That's pretty good benefit. Think about having from God. But it goes on to tell you, the point we're looking at here is, in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. All the families of the earth will be blessed through you. Now, how's that going to happen? Just through Abraham. What's through Abraham's seed as he goes down through, all the way down through, when you trace the generations, all the way down through from Abraham to Christ. And Christ is that blessing. Remember back in Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, the promise we had made there about the seed would come and crush the head of Satan. It's another promise here. 3:15 is one we need to know. Genesis 12, the first 7 verses need to know these promises here. So he knew all the families of the earth will be blessed. That is, through your seed, through your posterity, the verse here says, I'll be blessed. The gospel will be preached throughout the world. Innumerable blessings will come and derive of mankind through the death, intersection of Christ. With the Christ lineage that we're looking at here to get down to that. Then here's the verse I mentioned earlier about all the nations be blessed. It's a combination of nation promise and the seed promise. Galatians chapter 3. Scriptures foreseen that God would justify the Gentiles by faith. Preach the gospel. We'll come back to that phrase in a minute. Preach the gospel to Abraham way back before, saying in you all the nations of the earth will be blessed. So we get a plural blessing here. A blessing of all the nations. Not just I'll make you a great nation. The nation of Israel. Physical blessing. But then the blessing for all the nations there. And there's a phrase here that says, think about this, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preach the gospel to Abraham. How was the gospel preached to Abraham? What does gospel mean anyhow? Think about preaching the gospel. What are we preaching? We got news about Christ. So, gospel was preached to Abraham. What did God tell Abraham about? The seed promise. He's telling him exactly what's going to happen here. He preached the gospel to Abraham. Now, what detail we don't know, but he made this promise to Abraham that through you all the nations of the earth will be blessed. He told Abraham that through his seed, this blessing was coming. The good news about Christ was coming. Now, exactly what he told him, how much he told him, we don't know, except the fact he made this promise to him, that through you, all the nations of the earth be blessed. And that's all the nations, not just the nation of Israel, but the blessing that comes in through Christ. And he preached the gospel and didn't use Abraham. All right. We got those two promises made. The nation promise and the seed promise in verses 2 and 3. Now we get a little bit of Abraham moving. He leaves Haran. And he's 75 years old. Takes Sarai, his wife, with him. Lot, his nephew, is with him. And they come on down now to Canaan. And we'll look at the maps here in a minute and see this. So So they've gone up from Ur, up Euphrates River Valley to Haran, and then now down into Cana. They stop at the city of Shechem. And I will see a map here and see some of that. So there's Ur, way down in the Mesopotamia Valley, up to Haran, and down into Cana then. The map in your mind there. And then we're going to start focusing now on this little section down here. We'll get some excursions back out to different parts, into Egypt and back to the Mesopotamia Valley here a little bit later on to go through the book of Genesis. But our main focus now is going to be this little land of Canaan down here, this promised land that's going to come here in these next few verses, which is verse 7. So we get the seed, the nation promise, then the seed promise. Now in verse 7, we get the land promise. So Abraham has come down into this land. Abram has come into this land. And God comes to him and says, to your descendants, I will give this land. So this is where I wanted you to go when I told you to leave and go. This is the land I was going to give you. Now, what's significant about this being named the land of Canaan and the Canaanites living here? How does that tie into some things we got, we've already talked about back in history a little bit? Who's Canaan have come from as far as the sea, the sons of Noah? Son of Ham? What did Ham do to Noah? After Noah's dropped in his tent. Remember that? Went in and saw his father's nakedness, cursed through Canaan, his son Ham, because of that. And you look through the things were made, there's comments made about that, and it's that the sons of Shem, the descendants of Shem, would rule over or conquer these other people here. So the Canaan is going to be cursed and driven out of their land because of that. Going back to that promise of Noah here. Think about this land promise here. It was given to Abraham. We jump way ahead again to Joshua, the end of the book of Joshua. You see, this one fulfilled, and we'll get to that later on, of course, in the study here. But if we go on past the Egyptian bondage, the Exodus are coming out, the water in the wilderness, and they're ready to go in and conquer the land, and they do conquer then under Joshua's leadership. And this verse here is the climax of them getting this land that God promised Abraham here. Joshua 21, verse 43, the Lord God gave to Israel all the land which he has sworn to give to their fathers. And fathers there, plural, we're going to see that same promise is made to Abraham about the promises of the seed, the nation, and the land, repeated to Abraham and also repeated to his son Isaac and to his son Jacob. So they made all three of these patriarchs had these same promises made to them. This promise here was completed after they went in and conquered the land. So the nation promise was fulfilled at Sinai, and then the land promise at the end of Joshua, and then the seed promises, well, in the New Testament. So here's the land of Canaan. We got several maps we'll see as we go through here this morning. Here's the land of Canaan, and we'll point out two or three cities particularly. We came down to Shechem first, which is up here in the middle of the country, up here. Take note of Bethel. I'm out my dot to be still. Bethel here is Jerusalem. Jerusalem comes into play in the next lesson, Wednesday night's lesson. This slide here. There's Jerusalem, top of the Dead Sea. Beersheba is way down here in the south part. Those are the kind of three cities we'll see into play today and come into Wednesday night, some more of that. So Shechem in the middle up here, Bethel, and then Beersheba down here in the south. This is the land then that he promised. Promised Abraham in chapter 12, verse 7. So the last part of that same verse, verse 7, then says that Abraham built an altar there. He's in Shechem now. Built an altar there and worshiped God. Then if you go one verse further, he moves to Bethel. And we just saw Bethel on the map there. Coming down more in the center of the land, just slightly above Jerusalem. And only one verse later in verse 8, what did Abraham do again? Built an altar there and worship God. So you see this full pattern going through here. There it is. verse 8. Built an altar there in Bethel and worshiped God there. So same thing in Shechem, and now again in Bethel. So, a couple more maps here from land. This Shechem we saw a minute ago way up here. Here's the very top of the Dead Sea down here with the Jordan River Valley down here. This map actually shows some of the mountainous type things here. Off the Dead Sea, here's Jerusalem, referred to as Salem here, which we'll see in next lesson. And coastal plain, of course, Mediterranean Sea is over here. And here is Bethel and Ai. We're going to find Abraham pitched his tent between Bethel on the west and Ai on the east in a minute. So that's where that is. Come right on down a little further down here and get to Shechem. It's often, Beersheba, down in the south of them. See that just in a minute later on. But here, Shechem's up here, and Bethel and Ai here. Let's keep in mind where Jerusalem is for reference down here on the mouse. So, wrong direction. There's a Bethel, or, then he moves on to the south, to the Negev, N-E-G-E-V, you'll see it in some places there. South, ongoing, he's going down through the land. Shechem, Bethel, he comes down to the Negev, to the south. And there's a famine in the land. So, let's look at that thing. This is a map. It's the desert part. Now here's Beersheba, we just talked about. Bethel and Ai is up here, Shechem up the top. Here's Beersheba. Here's the Dead Sea over here, right at the very top up there, with going across to Jerusalem. But when you see on this map, this is the Negev. It's this desert, deserted, wilderness land out here. Down to the south of the land. So, it's a land where nobody lives that much. Dry, barren, dusty. Here's a picture, a more modern day picture of it. You can still see some of the dryness, the desert wilderness part of it there. Again, more modern type picture here. So it's got some cultivation things going on. But not a land you want to travel in and be in if you're like Abraham, moving around like he is, a nomad that much. So, famine in the land, verse 12, coming down through Genesis chapter 12 and verse 10. It's about famine. So he goes down to Egypt. Abraham is. He's way off down this way down here, with Egypt. And he's with Sarai's wife, Lot, his nephew, and it says, Abraham makes a request of Sarah. What do you ask her to do? Say you're what? Say you're my sister. Well, why did he want that? What's he afraid of? He's afraid of his wife. They're going to kill him, okay? And we'll see a slide of this. Not uncommon at that time for a king, a monarch, a absolute authority type figure that they had within the country. We don't have that we're familiar with. To take what he wanted, including wives, including women. So Sarah's very beautiful. You know, one verse says she was very, very beautiful woman. Abraham feared for his life. So he asked her to tell them, you're my sister. So they wouldn't kill him to get her. Jumping way ahead, Abraham uses the same thing again later on. He didn't learn the first time with Abimelech. And from this verse, we learn that she really was his half-sister, the daughter of his father, but not the daughter of his mother. So it was his half-sister. So the question, I guess, here is, Abraham telling a half-truth or a half-lie? It was halfway the truth. She was his sister. But it was not all the truth. Wrong impression. It was total deceit. You've been sworn in something. You promised to tell the truth. What? The truth. The whole truth. And nothing but the truth. Well, Abraham didn't tell the whole truth. He told half the truth. So it was certainly wrong. So, the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And the point here that I mentioned earlier. It was not uncommon in that time for these kings just to take these unmarried women, and she would be unmarried if she was Abraham's sister, not his wife. Unmarried women into their harem there. Depending on how many wives Solomon had, think about that further down here. And even though a brother or a father might deplore what was going on, he just kind of had to keep his mouth shut because that's just the way it was. After all, if he is the absolute ruling king and you rebel against him taking your sister, what's he going to do to you? Exactly the same thing that Abraham was worried about when he wanted to kill him. So it's a royal right. It's not resisted or questioned. So that kind of gives an idea as to why Abraham was worried about this. It's not like this just, he's just my sister and so what. He was actually fearful. He was fearful for his life. Abraham's treated well because his sister now is part of Pharaoh's harem, one of his wives here going to be. And so he's treated well. But not so for the Egyptians. One translation says diseases came upon them. Another translation says plagues came upon them. Pharaoh and his wife. So Pharaoh then, because of this, learned the truth about who she really is. And so he tells Abraham to take your wife, gives it back to her, and sends him away out of Egypt to leave it. Now, when we start talking about this part here, I want to back up, way back up. On your questions, go back to number 3. We didn't talk about this. I meant to stop and do it. Go back and do it now. There's a word that's in verse 1. Now the Lord had said to Abram. Some translations don't have that word had in there. The Lord said to Abram, the Lord had said to Abram. So the point I was getting to in this verse here, question 3, I mean, is if you look down to these different things here, trying to figure out when did God tell Abraham to get up and leave? Leave Ur. It already happened before he got to Haran in verse 1 here. But the word hadn't been there. He had said to Abraham, versus he had told him, called him when he was actually in Haran up there to go. If you look at any of the other verses here, chapter 11, Terah had already taken his grandson Lot and Sarah and Abram and went from Ur up to Haran. Chapter 15, verse 7 says, I'm the Lord who brought you out of Ur to give you this land for an inheritance here. So God did call him out of Ur, not out of Haran. So God called him from there. 24, 7, Lord God of heaven who took me from my father's house, land of my family, spoke to me and swore me, saying to your descendants, I give this land. Send this angel before you, take your wife, your son there. It's when you send him back to get a son for, you know, a wife for Isaac. Then jump way on down to Acts when Stephen's been about to be stoned. He's preaching and he's recounting this whole Jewish history down through here. And he says, the God of glory appeared to our father Abram when he was in Mesopotamia before he dwelt in Haran. So God called Abraham from Ur. But then he goes up to Haran, where his father dies. He leaves there and comes down to the land. So you look at the word had in there, when they're in Genesis 12:1, they're already in Haran. So God had called him out of Ur before he got up to Haran. That's the implication of that. I said some translations leave that word had out of there. And that's why I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. Yeah, I'm sure that's confusing to everybody, but you don't have that word in there. It looks like he called him from Haran, not from Ur. Okay. I think I've left out chapter 12 so far. Something I want to talk about. Yes, sir. Yeah, sometimes we put, and certainly people like Abraham deserve to be on a pedestal, but sometimes we put them too high of a pedestal because they're humans and they're going to make mistakes. And Abraham made a mistake. He lied. He didn't have the confidence in God that God would take care of him and make it. He had no children at this time. So how's God going to make a great nation out of you? And Abraham believes that later on because he knows that if he kills Isaac, he's still going to get in that to make that great nation in some form. That's later on here. At this point here, he could die without having a great nation made from him because he had no seed at this time, no children. So that faith was there. So let's talk about Abraham's faith a little bit and our faith a little bit. We've got a few minutes left. We looked at Hebrews 11, verse 8. We're going to flip over to chapter 11 of Hebrews, which I'm going to be for a couple of minutes here. We looked at verse 8 Wednesday night when they kind of introduced Abraham here, where he says, by faith, Abraham obeyed and was called to go out of the place which he would receive as an inheritance, went out not knowing where he was going, which ties right back into what we talked about in chapter 12 here this morning. He left, family left, his own country, didn't know where he was going, he went. And that's what Hebrews 11, 8 is saying. But let's go on down and look at the next part of that. Verse 10 gets into it here. By faith, he dwelt in the land of promise. It's in a foreign country. Well, he was in a foreign country. Dwelt in tents with Isaac and Jacob. Again, as I said earlier, the promise is being made to them later on too. Heirs with him the same promise. He waited for the city whose had foundations, whose builder and maker was God. So. How do you think Abraham acted when God told him to get up, to leave his country, to leave his family, and go to land I'm going to show you? Well, let me think about that a while. See if that's what I really want to do. That was really best for me and my family. That's where I'm going to spend the rest of my life. Sure. So, what's his reaction? You have to leave your country, leave your family, leave your father's house, and go somewhere. I'll let you know when you get there where you're going. This commentator here says that there's no indication that Abraham wasted any time on what he turned to be useless reasonings, uselessly thinking about what am I going to do. It's just, all we have told us in the Bible is, he went. God said, come, go, and he went. Implicit faith, the promise of God, prompt obedience to his commands, becomes us. We know what God tells us to do. We have that faith that Abraham had. And we do what God tells us to do. Like those promises we talked about when it's night. We travel by faith that works through love and leads to the paradise of God. This guy, his comments here from this one. So think about our faith. I like it when I'm good. Thank you, Mike. Leave it right into my next slide, Mike. I appreciate it. We're on the same track. That's good. All right, the last part of Hebrews 11, verse 10 said Abraham was looking for a city. What Mike's talking about here? A city whose what? Builder, has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. As far as we know, did Abraham ever live in a facility, a house that had foundations? What did he live in? A tent, okay? It's a tent. So when he's looking for a house with foundations, what's that like compared to a tent? Permanency, okay? That's exactly the word we're looking for. Permanency. Abraham was he moved up and down all through the land, constantly on move. He had no permanent dwelling place there. But he's looking for one. He's looking for one of the foundations, something that's solid to hang on to. And who's going to build this one? God is. Okay. So Abraham's faith is not just going to that land he's going to. Didn't know where it was. He put another land. And that's not living in tents and moving about this time. This city has got a foundation, as Mike Rivers from the Book of Revelation. It's got a foundation. And God is his builder and his maker. And the last line on the slide down there said he lost sight of his earthly things, looking at what? Toward heaven, the heavenly view. Now, that applies to us. From Luke chapter 9. He said to all of them, if anyone desires to come after me, do we? Let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. Now, just take that one more verse by itself and compare it to what Abraham did. What did Abraham do? God says, get up and go. Come follow me to land. I'm going to show you where it is. What did Abraham do? Got wet. As far as we know, there's no question. There's no thinking about it. There's just he got up and went. So, if we're going to follow God, if we're going to desire to come after him, put here, what are we going to do? We're going to do what it takes to get there. We have a desire to save his life. That's the phrase to look at here. I'm going to save my life. I'm going to lose it. And lose his life for Christ's sake. We'll save it. After all, the next verse, that's a very familiar one. What we gain if we gain the whole world, lose our own soul, right? Lost and destroyed. None. So, another question I ask here, in the next verse we're going to slide here in a minute, what does it mean to be ashamed of Christ? What does it mean to look at the world instead of God and what he wants me to do? If you're ashamed of me and my words, this is the very next verse after 23, 24, 25, 26 now. Same context. Whoever is ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man will be ashamed when he comes in his glory with his Father and the holy angels. So, go back up here one more time. Anyone desire to come after me? So if you look at this verse and look at 26, if you come after me, you're going to follow me, you're going to do what I say, you're going to gain the world, gain your life, you're going to save your life, versus you're going to be ashamed of me. You don't come after me, you'll follow me. And if you're ashamed of me, what's going to happen at the end then? God's going to be ashamed of you when he comes with his angels and all his glory. So, my question, are we guilty? Do we hesitate? When God tells us what to do, gives us a command, we step out, reach out beyond our comfort zone here, by faith. Abraham, get out of his comfort zone. And yeah, just a little bit. Do we ever step out beyond our comfort zone? Or we're in that nice little comfort world here. Here's what I do. You see something God wants us to do. A challenge, a new challenge. We step out. Reach for it. I've been on the treadmill this morning, and the only thing that came to my mind to the Lord was faith of our fathers. I don't know why it's all popped in my mind, but I just get one of the words of faith of our fathers. I just less than mine. The thing about the faith of Abraham. That's the song I had on here. Here's what I was thinking about. I did this lesson stuff here. Remember this song here? All of self, none of thee. That's how the word starts out. And then we go to that little gradual change here. Some of self and some of thee. And less of self and more of thee. And get down to another self and all of thee. So, think about Abraham and his choice. God said, Abraham, get up and go. And he did it. And we're going to say Abraham's faith more times when we go through the book of Genesis here. But let that come to a challenge for us in our faith. If God gives us a challenge, let's reach out there by faith and grab it. Any comments? That's all I've got. All right, one more? Go ahead. Right. Not his sons, yeah, okay. Yep. We don't think about the relationships of these people way back then, how it applies on down through the scripture. But Shem, Ham, and Japheth all played into that. And we got the sons of Joseph, sons of Jacob later on, and the different things that happened to them too. That's that most likely. Okay. Bell rung or time for something. Thank you. 13 and 14 for Wednesday night, chapters 13 and 14. You'll read them a couple of times. Be good. Thank you. Thank you.